Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Smell that oil. I mean, fresh air. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, this is not my main pursuit in life, this radio show. Needless to say, it must be obvious when you hear it. So it takes a while to connect the dots and figure out why is somebody saying they love the show I did last week and it was a two-year-old show? So it apparently in some cities, or as we call them in the industry, markets, around the country, you didn't hear this show last week. Of course, this show is this week's show, but you know what I'm saying. So if that ever happens, that's why there's the internet. I mean, no, don't get me wrong. I love my stations. This show never sounds... Radio sounds best on the radio. It's easy. Yeah, I mean, it's true and easy. But if I'm not talking about what happened this week, something's gone wrong somewhere. So check it out on the internet. Speaking of which, it was 2 years ago this coming June that Newt Gingrich emerged from a Republican confab, a high-level Republican confab, and tweeted to his followers on Twitter the news that he was pushing for a new slogan for the Republican presidential nominee, and he was going to push for it, and he was urging all of his Republican friends to push for it, too. As far as I know, this is where it started, and the slogan was, drill here, drill now. And the third part of it, you may not remember, was pay less. How's that pay-less-y thing working out for you? So it's not Sarah Palin repeated it ad nauseum and then changed it to drill, baby, drill because she's so soulful. But it started with Newt and his friends at that retreat 2 years ago. Guess who we haven't heard from lately in the last week on this whole thing? Oh, Newtie. Newtie. Here, baby. He's on a book tour, film tour, hiding from the media tour, some kind of tour. It's bad out in the Gulf. And, you know, we live in a world where probably glib reassurances maybe shouldn't be taken at face value anymore. When you say, it really is, in a way, a tribute to the American can-do spirit, probably the last refuge of the American can-do spirit, that a British oil company says, oh, of course we can put in a well a mile down in the ocean floor and with the enormous pressures that things operate under that deep. And it's fun. No way there's going to be a thing. And we believe it. Somebody believes it. Nobody says, a mile down? Are you sure? Wouldn't you want to have, like, a backup for the backup for the backup? We have backups for our email, ladies and gentlemen. See what I'm saying? And that doesn't damage anything but reputations. But news of the godly, Pope Benedict XVI is to appoint an envoy to overhaul a conservative Roman Catholic order whose Mexican founder abused young children over many years. That would be a series of young children then. Maciel's actions were immoral, and the Legionnaires of Christ order had to be purified, according to the Vatican. Maciel died in 2008, fathered a daughter with a mistress, as well as sexually abusing many boys and young men over a period of 30 years. He had enjoyed the support of the previous Pope, John Paul II, soon to be a saint. In 2006, Father Maciel was banned from exercising his ministry. It's BBC talk, in public, and told to retire to a life of prayer and penitence, accompanied by some young assistants. No, sorry. The priest founded the Conservative Order, I repeat, the Conservative Order, in 1941, had always denied any wrongdoing. He died at the age of 87. The Vatican statement came after the Pope met three bishops who investigated the order. It said Father Maciel had led a double life devoid of scruples and authentic religious sentiment. All right, then. And a lawyer for the Vatican says the former archbishop of the diocese, more news of the godly, the former archbishop of the Diocese of Portland, Oregon, says a lawyer for the Vatican, properly handled, a priest who had molested a 13-year-old boy properly by the norms of the 1990s. Cardinal William Levada did nothing as the Archbishop of San Francisco to restrict the priest after learning of the abuse way back in 1995.
I remember when they had back when we had Prodigy.
In a 2005 deposition obtained by the Associated Press, Levada said he didn't contact police because he trusted the priest would not reoffend. Yeah, that's with those 1990s values. Trusting pedophile priests. I remember that. Vatican's lawyer, Jeffrey Lena, says while norms have evolved significantly since then, the priest didn't reoffend. So he says, in that case, the old approach did work. You know, maybe we should re-examine those 90s norms. Or Denny's. And ladies and gentlemen, this is New Orleans. It's, yes, there's some dread in the air as we contemplate what's going on in the Gulf. But on the other hand, at midnight tonight, the mayoralty of C. Ray Nagin comes to an end. Hello, welcome to the show.
To beg you to hold me, cause somebody else will. You don't have to love me when I want it, cause somebody else will. Say you don't need it. But all the time they're trying to get it. I said you better look out. Your good things about to come to an end. Yeah, baby. I'm talking about your real good. To come to an end. All those nights I watched the four walls. I didn't have to watch them all alone. Whenever someone said they wanted me, tell them I was your very own. You have all the love I've got, baby. And even ice melts to water when it gets hot. Hey, you better look out. Your good things about to come to an end. I'm talking about your real good things about to come to an end. Getting myself back together is gonna be a big problem, I know. But when the right girl says that she wants me, you can bet I won't say no, no, no. Look out, baby, your good things about to come to an end, baby. I'm talking about you, real.
from the shores of Lake Pontchartrain. It's clean. Really. In New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. More on the spill. Interesting to check just a couple of years back in history, back in the when we were still living by the norms of the 2000s. Tony Hayward, who became chief executive of British Petroleum in August 2007, made his first comments to the press the preceding February. Hayward, the current and at that time new chief of BP, said his strategy was to, quote, focus like a laser on safe and reliable operations, unquote.
The laser broke. Mr. Hayward, the laser broke.
And there's more. Always there's more, of course, till it stops, till the satellite breaks. For those of you who just sort of automatically, sort of reflexively hear the word oil and there's a little part of your brain that goes, Halliburton, this might be instructive. On Friday, Halliburton, the oil field services giant, responded to speculation that the Gulf disaster might have been related to cementing the process of installing casing to secure the walls of an oil well. A federal study has found that cementing problems were associated with almost half of the 39 offshore blowouts between 1992 and 2006, almost all in the Gulf of Mexico. Gulf of Mexico. Halliburton, which performed a number of functions on this particular rig, including cementing, said in a statement it had completed the work just about 20 hours before the accident. It said it had conducted tests demonstrating the integrity of the cementing work. You got to trust Halliburton's tests, don't you think? They are named as a defendant in most of the more than 24 lawsuits filed by Gulf Coast businesses saying the oil spill could ruin them financially. One lawsuit filed by an injured technician on the rig alleges that Halliburton improperly performed its job in cementing the wall, increasing the pressure at the well and contributing to the fire explosion and resulting oil spill. But that's just a lawsuit, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, we'll learn more in the days, weeks, months, and years to come. But now, yes, we have the music. Tales of Airport Security. John writes, Dear Harry, I'd shopped carefully for a bottle of Optifree, I guess it was that contact lens thing, that I could take in my carry-on baggage. But the TSA inspector said he needed to test it because at 4 ounces, it was oversized. I said, while I wasn't sure whether the limit was 3 or 4 ounces, I was sure the bottle was airplane compliant. With utmost sincerity, the TSA worker said that it may have been airplane compliant, but it wasn't airport compliant. When we got home, I fished the box out of the wastebasket. It was labeled carry-on size, TSA compliant. Tales of Airport Security, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That just means don't believe them. Don't believe the box. That's just, the box was written by the same people that wrote Focus Like a Laser on safe and reliable operations. Same writer. I recognize the style. Ladies and gentlemen, it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap. It's too clean, safe, cheap to meter. It's just too cool. It's just too wonderful. It's nuclear energy. Dateline, Vienna, 24 years after the Chernobyl nuclear accident. The director of Chernobyl at that time says the accident, quote, taught no one anything, unquote. Not because people could not have learned from what happened there, but rather because the Soviet government and other backers of nuclear power did not want to learn lest they undermine their corporate interests. Soviets and corporations have the same This is Glenn Beck talking. Viktor Bryukhanov, the Chernobyl plant's director from its establishment in 1970 to the time of the accident, who was then sentenced to 10 years in prison for his role in the disaster. Yeah, that's a bad old Soviet. The guy runs Chernobyl, he's sentenced to 10 years in prison. I'm sure the people who screwed up the levees in New Orleans were... He says Moscow preferred to, quote, liquidate the symbol of the danger rather than deal with the causes. Bryukhanov talks about the accident, which claimed 31 lives, exposed 600,000 people involved in the cleanup to dangerous levels of radiation and resulted in almost 18,000 premature deaths since that time. It describes what happened to him and why, when the Soviet authorities made him and his subordinates scapegoats for the accident, himself an invalid because of exposure to a massive dose of radiation. How does that happen? It's clean. Bryukhanov says that to this day he does not accept either the official version, accepted by the IAEA, that the operator error caused the disaster, or the speculations of some in the media that there were fatal problems with the reactor model or that it was being used for military purposes. He notes that at the time the quality of the reactor was quite possibly of the highest level. That's reassuring. But as far as possible use of the reactor for making nuclear weapons, he said, there were parts of the plant where even I as a director could not go. Only members of the special services were allowed. He says the staff did make mistakes, but he pointed out when the staff pushed the stop button, the reactor, instead of stopping, blew up. Might have to relabel that button. It becomes the blow-up button now. Exactly why that happened has not been established. Initially, Bryukhanov says he did not recognize what had happened, and understanding of the extent of the catastrophe came only later. At the time, he said no one understood what happened. Worse, he said, no one seemed especially interested in finding out. But he did understand immediately the powers that be planned to blame him for what had happened. They falsely accused him of being, quote, in the woods with a lover, unquote, at the time of the accident, when in fact he was at home with his family. They just happened to live in the woods. No, he... Come on now, please. All right, that's his story. Asked when the world will finally learn the truth about Chernobyl, Bryukhanov responded that we will not find out the truth, not because they're concealing it. They cannot understand it in the immediate aftermath of the accident when it was possible to clarify what happened. No one wanted to do that. Well, of course not. That would be looking backwards. We move forward, sir. See you in the woods. The security of radioactive waste in India. Well, that's got to be clean, safe, and cheap. Is being questioned after an elite research institution sold equipment contaminated by deadly cobalt 60 to a junkyard. You know, like you do with your deadly cobalt 60 stuff. A 35-year-old scrap dealer died from multiple organ failure caused by radiation poisoning this week after being exposed to the cobalt-60 at the scrapyard earlier this month. Seven other workers were hospitalized for radiation sickness. Radiation sickness. With two reportedly seriously ill and requiring urgent bone marrow transplants. The source of the radiation was a machine called a gamma irradiator, discarded from a chemistry laboratory at the University of Delhi. The scrapyard had to be cordoned off in early April while specialists retrieved the radioactive material. The gentleman, the 35-year-old scrap dealer, is believed to be India's first radiation fatality. He dismantled the instrument. Lesson to all you kids. Leave those gamma irradiators alone when you come across them in scrap yards, will you? Don't dismantle them. Leave them intact. They're better that way. And Over on the other side of the world, an investigation has begun into how bags of radioactive waste from the Sellafield nuclear complex in Cumbria, the United Kingdom, ended up in a landfill site. Apparently everybody's thinking, everybody's got the same idea. Just dump it. Just dump it. Ladies and gentlemen, we are all five-year-olds, aren't we? Just put it, you know, somebody else will figure it out. Five bags of low-level waste were sent to Lily Hall in Workington instead of to the nearby nuclear waste dump. The bags, which contained paper, plastic, clothing, and wood, were no danger to the public, according to the plant managers. Monitoring equipment failed to properly identify the bags as containing low-level radioactive waste. But that's just monitoring equipment to detect radioactivity. Nothing to worry about here. All the bags have been retrieved and returned to the nuclear plant at Sellafield. I don't know about you. I feel reassured. And that was, of course, the point of the exercise, because it is clean, safe, cheap to... Now, ladies and gentlemen, let us turn, please, to AFPAC. I guess I'm the only one that still calls it that. It was the Obama administration's name for the Afghanistan-Pakistan thing for about a year. They dumped the phrase or the locution. But I like it. AFPAC. So I persist. That is to say, if the show's still on the air in your area. The declining security situation, this is from DODBuzz.com, which would be an internal Defense Department kind of bloggy, tweety thing. How's that bloggy, tweety thing working out for you? The declining security situation in Afghanistan has leveled off in many areas in the last 3 months. This is according to a Pentagon progress report to Congress. At the same time, overall violence in Afghanistan is sharply up, an 87% increase over the seasonal average of the same period last year. The report attributes increased violence to the stepped-up operations as more U.S. troops have arrived. That's right. No, we're not causing the violence, but more violence is associated with more of us. Insurgent attacks increased during 2009, then peaked in August just before the presidential elections. The insurgents perceived 2009 as their most successful year ever, says the report. High levels of violence, poor turnout during the election, and reports of Afghan government fraud contributed to a sense of success among the Taliban. The Taliban have re-infiltrated areas cleared by the Marines and are again intimidating the population, according to the Pentagon. Some individual islands of security exist in the sea of instability and insecurity, says the Pentagon report. Ladies and gentlemen, the government of Afghanistan President Hamid Karzai remains incapable of providing tangible benefits to the population, according to the Pentagon, a weakness that is being exploited by the Taliban. Quote, the inability of the government to provide essential services and exploitative behavior of some government officials are contributing to the success of the insurgents' campaign, unquote. Over the first quarter of 2010, the report continues, the insurgents' strategy has proven effective in slowing the appeal of government, slowing the spread of governance and development. The insurgency has also been under unprecedented pressure. The insurgency, the Pentagon says, has a robust means of sustaining operations. Small arms and IED material are readily available. External funding is top-down. External money comes primarily from Islamic states and is delivered via couriers. A steady stream of recruits is drawn from a disaffected Afghan populace. This sounds good. The spread and effective decisiveness of Taliban information operations and its... This is the Pentagon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pentagon's report. The speed and decisiveness of Taliban information operations and its media campaign is its most significant strength. The influence of the Taliban shadow government established in local areas is increasing. Taliban tactics and their complex attacks are increasing in sophistication and strategic impact, says the Pentagon. The Taliban's weakness is, whew, thank God. I never thought we'd get to these. Persistent fissures among the leadership. Multiple layers of command that can complicate operations. Thank God we don't suffer from that. overly reliant on external support, and dependent on the marginalized segments of the population. As long as we don't marginalize those segments with corrupt government, we're cool. British and other foreign troops deployed in Afghanistan face a very tough time ahead and could expect to be engaged in a combat role for 3 or 4 more years, according to NATO's most senior civilian official in Afghanistan. Mark Sedwill warned of further troop deaths in the region, saying we cannot allow judgment of success to be the absence of casualties. Critical test will be the imminent operation in Kandahar designed to improve security and governance in the Taliban's heartland. All right, then, we'll be watching Kandahar. Good luck with that thing. And over the border, even by the standards of a bullet and bomb dodging Taliban commander, Hakimullah Masood has displayed notable survival skills, ladies and gentlemen. The Pakistani Taliban chief was thought to have died in a leadership duel last summer, only to stage a news conference a few weeks later. A U.S. drone strike in January was followed by intense speculation about his fate, then statements by Pakistani intelligence officials that he was 100% dead. On Thursday, those intelligence officials circulated another message. The Pakistani Taliban chief is alive. Earlier reports that Masood was dead, repeated by U.S. officials, were hailed as a potentially fatal blow to the Pakistani Taliban. News of his survival again underscores the staying power of the group. He's alive! Well, you know, Alexander the Great couldn't figure it out. News of AFPAC, ladies and gentlemen. And if you've been following the financial news, there was a report this week that home foreclosures are still on the rise and are expected to be high through the end of next year. Glimmers of hope.
Like
This is Le Show, and now...
He's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector. He peeks at no stoops. He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I said. Ladies and gentlemen, General Motors on April 21, you may recall, paid the balance of its $6.7 million billion, I said B as in Boston, billion, loan to the United States government under the Troubled Assets Relief Program. That was the good news, wasn't it? Didn't that all warm us up and make us feel like, hey, GM trumpeted this escape from the program as evidence that it had turned the corner in its operations. GM is able to repay the taxpayers in full with interest ahead of schedule because more customers are buying vehicles like the Chevrolet Malibu and the Buick LaCrosse, said Edmund Whitaker, its chief executive. GM also crowed about its loan repayment in a national television ad, and the U.S. Treasury marked the moment with a press release. What neither GM nor the Treasury disclosed was that the company simply used other funds held by the Treasury to pay off its original loan. Neil Borofsky, the inspector general overseeing the troubled asset program, and originally was the assets that were troubled, not the program, revealed this detail when he spoke before the Senate Finance Committee. It's good news they're reducing their debt, Borofsky said of GM, but he went on to note that GM was using other taxpayer money to make the loan repayment. So Senator Charles Grassley fired off a letter to Tim Geithner asking for details of the transaction. I'm concerned, he said, that the announcement is not what it seems. It appears nothing more than an elaborate TARP money shuffle. That was in Grassley's letter. The Treasury Secretary replied this past week. His Assistant Secretary for Financial Stability confirms the money GM used to repay its bailout loan had come from a taxpayer-financed escrow account held for GM at the Treasury. But the cash in the account, he emphasized, was the property of GM. The department had approved the company's use of the money to repay the original debt because it was consistent with Treasury's goal of... The Treasury went along with the public relations campaign and didn't spell out how the loan was retired. The public would know nothing about the TARP escrow money being the source of the supposed repayment from watching the TV ad, says Senator Grassley. Much of it will never be repaid. The Congressional Budget Office estimates the taxpayers will lose around $30 billion on GM. The GM spokesman said the company had made no misrepresentations about its repayment. The bottom line is our strong business performance has put us in the position we don't need these funds, he says, referring to the cash in the escrow account. News of Inspectors General. Ladies and gentlemen, copyright feature of this broadcast. The Iraqi election. Remember that? Remember Iraq? Man, those were the days. That was early 21st century values and norms we were living by then, weren't they? Well, they had this election some weeks, stretching into months ago. Very tight. Ayad Alawi's secular faction won a couple more seats than Nouri al-Maliki's government faction, currently governing faction, which is Shiite and which is alleged to have ties to Iran. But as has been discussed on this program, the process of figuring out who's going to form the new government has been complicated because the country's de-Ba'athification agency has been disqualifying candidates who already won on grounds that they were tainted with connections to the Ba'athist Party, which was, of course, the party of former strongman Saddam Hussein. The De-Ba'athification Commission is headed by Ahmed Chalabi. How does this happen? And the people he's disqualifying are all Sunnis. And so the thing just simmers, largely unwatched, except there were reports this week that our ambassador to Iraq had been inveighing with the Iraqi government to please, please bring this to a head. Please, please wind this up. Please settle this before, you know. And there were reports late in the week, at least one report in the Washington Post, that Secretary of State Clinton was also weighing in, trying to help persuade Prime Minister Maliki that maybe it would be better to form a government sooner rather than later. At least she was considering weighing in. We don't know if she actually had direct contact with him, a question that might be answered in the next edition of Clinton Something Moments, well, right now here on the show.
Clinton Something, the State Department years.
Coming up on Oprah, part two of Riel Hunter's story. You won't want to...
You won't want to what?
I won't want to anything. Man, that is one spacey lady.
You know, I feel sorry for her.
You feel sorry for Riel Hunter?
Mm-hmm.
Man, if I was still drinking, that'd be a cause for a highball right there.
Well, you can't feel sorry for John Edwards. Or, from what I hear, for Elizabeth, so...
All right, then. New data. Always welcome. Heck, when I came into the house, I was amazed you were watching Oprah's late-night rerun.
I was just trying to unwind from dealing with the Iraqis all week. I'm beginning to understand why Cheney liked to bomb them.
Yeah, well, I only sat down because I was trying to unwind from kissing Bob Rubin's ass. That's hard on the back of a man my age.
Use your knees.
Listen to us.
Bill, a little respect for the office.
Okay. Madam Toots, Bob Rubin may have written all the regulations that deregulated all the previous regulations, and they may have gotten $100 million from Citibank for his efforts, but he's still one of the smartest guys I know. And from the standpoint of the Clinton Global Initiative, he's still where the money is. You know, Jesse Jackson once told me, you have rallies for the poor people and dinners with the rich people. Breakfast is your own business.
He said the part about breakfast, too?
You know he didn't.
So, what's Bob Rubin want from you?
Dig this. The aura of legitimacy.
He said that.
Oh, we both knew it. I mean, man, Tony Blair's been clogging my inbox with requests for advice about that.
Well, I'd trade 30 Nuri al-Malikis for one Tony Blair, my God. Last time I had to deal with a man this stubborn, it was you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, the ambassador spent days saying you can't kick people who won out of the election after it's over, which, you know, seems like a sensible starting point for the whole...
democracy thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. I'm listening. I just got to get me a Virgin Mary.
I'm saying, isn't this time for me to step in, personally? God, too tired to take off my own shoes. Too bleeping tired.
Madam Secretary, mm-hmm. I have three words for you.
Yes, Prime Minister.
Bush versus Gore.
You know, it's two words and an abbreviation, but I'll give you that. Look, Mr. Prime Minister, the longer you prolong the length of your elongated stay in power, the worse it's going to be for your country, the more violence, the less chance that we'll be able to expedite our planned withdrawal, and that, sir, is... lose-lose.
And you have such expertise in democracy, because why? Because you know the combination to the deballed machines? Or because you hope next time Supreme Court chooses president, it's a Democrat? We appreciate everything your country has done to and for our country. But now, Madam Secretary, the wheels are off the bicycle.
And?
And that means we're old enough to ride on our own, correct?
Close enough. Mr. Prime Minister, look, nobody's perfect.
Strange. That was the point I was about to make next.
But you can't let Ahmed Chalabi keep pushing you in this direction. The Sunnis are ready to blow. That's lose-lose.
Believe me, Madam Secretary, Mr. Chalabi knows he is not welcome in this...
No, please don't interrupt your conversation just for me. Madam Secretary, you've never looked more curvaceous.
Mr. Chalabi, you look... well...
I'm feeling good, thank you. But of course, nothing makes you feel better than clean government, don't you agree? Which is, of course, why the bathification must continue, and if anything, intensify in this next critical period. Surely you see that if a few innocent Sunnis happen to get caught up in the drift net, at least they're not floating into a ginormous oil slick.
You say ginormous?
Only in your dreams, Madam Secretary. Only in your...
Man, nothing more refreshing than tomato juice without vodka in it. So, hon, you were saying?
Oh, nothing. Just thinking about the Iraqi mess, you know, and whether to make an unannounced visit over there, and I don't think that's wise.
Well, you can skip the trip, but if you want to just chill out and put on a burqa, that's cool, too.
You know, I wish you took the fate of our most vexing war between Vietnam and Afghanistan as seriously as you take the cultivation of Bob Rubin.
Hun, swear to God, if Bob Rubin takes a shine into the global initiative, we can have 30,000 home gardening kits airdropped into Iraq before August. So, you know, I'm being effective too here.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, I'll be in the small bedroom if you need me.
Night.
Youthful angst and middle-aged power. Together, they add up to Clinton-something. The State Department years.
Yeah, I'm no man.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week, won't you?
We're so sorry.
Uh-huh. Majority Leader Harry Reid of the U.S. Senate apologized to Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor this week, saying he didn't mean to impugn the integrity of the Republican Minority Leader when he accused McConnell of lying last week about financial reform. It's the non-insulting form of accusation of lying. The apology came just hours before the Senate was starting to vote on opening debate. Last week, I criticized the Republican leader for the way he was handling Wall Street reform, says Reid. I even criticized him for a series of meetings he held in New York and the result of the meetings. I want the record to be very clear, however. I was in no way impugning the integrity of my friend from Kentucky. Reid was asked, senators, you know. Dateline Columbus, Ohio. The estranged wife of former Ohio Attorney General Mark Dan apologized this week after pleading guilty to a misdemeanor ethics violation. Alyssa Lenhoff was given a 10-day suspended jail sentence and fined $1,000. Quote, I have been taught that my successes should always be shared with others and my failures and mistakes should always be mine alone. I've tried to teach my children this important lesson as well, she said. She was charged with knowingly having an interest in the profits of a public contract. She was a journalism instructor at local university, used her position as a public employee to try to obtain a grant from the Attorney General's office for a course, which she was scheduled to teach. It's too complicated for me to understand. An artist in residence teaching music to St. Mary's College students in Northern California has been disciplined and may be fired for having a student sing an original and racially demeaning version of Old Man River during a voice lesson last month. Louis Lebhertz, an instructor who is the brother of a college trustee, was forced to apologize to a student after the student complained. Lebhertz was also forced to apologize to the class and to complete diversity training. Mike Baksik, the producer of the Ticket Sports, at this Ticket Sports talk station in Dallas, suspended by the station Monday for remarks he made through his personal Twitter account, was fired the next day. The story on the incident was aired nationally on CNN, and after that he was fired. He said he was understood why he was fired, but disappointed. He wished the station had given him a moment of airtime to say, quote, how truly sorry I am. He said he was drunk at a bar Sunday night as he watched the Dallas Mavericks lose Game 4 of their playoff series to San Antonio. He began to send disparaging tweets that included, quote, congrats to all the dirty Mexicans in San Antonio, unquote. A former Major League pitcher, Baksik is best known in baseball for serving up Barry Bonds' record-breaking 756th home run. I know words and papers can sound cold and harsh without emotion, Baksik said, but for the people of San Antonio who probably will never forgive me, I say I am sorry, unquote. Japan's prime minister apologized to people suffering from a rare neurological disorder linked to eating fish contaminated with mercury dumped from a chemical plant as he attended a memorial service this week. I fully recognize the government's failure to prevent industrial pollution and contain the damage of Minamata disease, and once again offer my sincere apology, said Prime Minister Yukio Hatoyama, the first national leader to attend the annual Minamata Sufferers Memorial, and he offered the clearest ever apology. He vowed to quickly provide support to patients, many of them elderly. Well, I'd say quickly. Oshkosh police apologized this week to a newly elected school board member who was pulled out of a meeting for questioning about a suspicious email. Foreign Minister Katsuya Okada of Japan apologized this week to Mayor Norio Tomonaga of Sasebo, the city of Sasebo, over a secret accord with the United States about bringing nuclear weapons into Japan. At a meeting with the mayor, whose city hosts the U.S. naval base, Okada explained the contents of a report compiled by a foreign ministry panel of experts about the secret deal, a broadly defined secret agreement that gave tacit approval for U.S. warships to bring nuclear weapons into Japan. Okada apologized to the mayor, saying the government has handled the issue very dishonestly. The Office of the U.S. Census Bureau of New York formally apologized to representatives of the Brooklyn Jewish communities for not doing enough to accommodate the Jewish population. Only a fraction of the Jews living in Jewish neighborhoods were caught on the records of the recent census. The reason was that the forms were only received by residents on the eve of Passover, and most people found it impossible to fill out the questionnaires during such a chaotic time. U.S. National Security Advisor James Jones apologized this week for his opening Jewish merchant joke at the 25th anniversary gala of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. I wish that I had not made this off-the-cuff joke at the top of my remarks, and I apologize to anyone who was offended by it, Jones said. It also distracted from the larger message I carried that day, that the United States' commitment to Israel's security is sacrosanct. Yeah, I guess it did. Bolivian President Evo Morales has apologized for comments he made last week that linked homosexuality to eating chickens pumped with female hormones in industrial agriculture. Miami Dolphins general manager Jeff Ireland regrets offending the new Cowboys receiver, Dez Bryant. Bryant said in pre-draft interviews, one team asked him if his mother had been a prostitute. That was the Dolphins. Ireland issued a statement apologizing. Whitney Houston told her fans her vocals are getting a little temperamental and apologized as her voice failed on stage at London's O2 Arena. Washington, D.C. Mayor Adrian Fenty apologized Thursday for his decision to issue a certificate of appreciation honoring the leader of the ex-gay movement, which believes homosexuals can be rehabilitated. Local gay leaders said they were not satisfied. The leader of the ex-gay movement defended her honor. She said she'd been a leader of the ex-gay movement for almost a decade. Last year, she said her group successfully sued the city to have ex-gays recognized as a protected class under the city's Human Rights Act. The news director of an Atlanta TV station covering the slaying of a doctor in Connecticut has apologized to viewers in Connecticut after his news crew spoke to the suspect's wife, informing her of her husband's arrest, and the station broadcast the horrifying result as she fell to the floor weeping. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That's going to cap the leaking well of this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ, the shortwave giant at wherever it is on the dial. I forget. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at audible.com/theshow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And sometimes even available on your radio. And it would be just like it being fully available on your radio if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Address for this broadcast and a playlist of the music heard hereon, always available at harryshearer.com. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in Harm's Way and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM in New Orleans for helping to make today's program possible. And Le Show is on Twitter, at LeTwits. The
show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Fill her up, everybody.